Our first guest is Shu Hattori. Shu is author of the new book, The McKinsey Edge, Success Principles from the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm. Shu, welcome to Innovation Navigation.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. Why did you write this book? What motivated you to write a book about the success principles of McKinsey?
Well, I think this book is very dear to me because the starting point was actually because I was taking a lot of notes and from very amazing people, right, is at McKinsey, and they're very inspiring. And every time I learned about frameworks and new ways of thinking and problem solving, I would put that on notes, and I had two notebooks, in fact. One was just daily notebooks, and the other was regarding, you know, keeping a very organized one, and I called that a rule book. And then one day I realized that, you know, there's probably like these burning rules that everyone who comes through the gates of McKinsey and makes it to the top, they have these two or three burning rules that make them successful as a leader. So then I started asking them around what would their burning rules be and then how they became very successful. And that was sort of how I got started. And then I kept taking notes, and after a while I had a bunch of notes, probably like 67 different principles regarding how do you grow the self, and then how do you grow the others, and then process that included the systems and how made McKinsey successful and clients successful. And then after that, I put them together and synthesized them. So that was kind of the backdrop of how this was born.
And, you know, as somebody who spent 5 years there, even though my 5 years finished 20 years ago, I very much recognize the firm that you're describing. I recognize those principles. I remember being taught those principles. You know, whenever I did something wrong, I would be reminded of those principles. I mean, it very much was the firm I recognize. But my motivation to have you on this show is that McKinsey is a firm that has to go into a new situation and understand the problems that the client is facing and figure out a way to solve them. And,
right.
You know, one of the things I remember that my partner's telling me is that, you know, you're brought in to solve a problem that the client is giving you, but your real obligation is to solve the real problem. That sometimes, you know, the problem that you're given isn't the real problem. It's maybe only a symptom of a deeper issue, and that your obligation to the client and to McKinsey is to find that real problem and solve it. And, you know, when I think about innovation is about going out into a market and really trying to understand your customers and their needs, even if they can't describe them, and then creating a solution, a product, a service, a business model to solve that problem. And so that ability to go into a messy situation and make sense of it and design a solution for it is something that I think McKinsey consultants and innovation leaders share. And so I was interested in your perspective on, you know, if I'm a leader in charge of a team whose mission is to develop a new and better service, what advice could you give me? And so let me ask you that question, that if you were asked to pick out your favorite principles from this book and, you know, which ones would best apply to somebody just taking over a role as an innovation leader?
Yeah, so like you said, Dave, I think there's a lot of commonality between innovation and then what we learned at McKinsey and McKinsey leaders. And I think some of the principles that are outlined here really really make that come about. And I would say probably three or four that really kicks off is principle number five, which is called front load your project. So this is about in McKinsey when we start a project, and it's like you said, it's vague, and we have to define the problem as we go along. We have to structure the problem, break down the problem, and then we have to prioritize, and then we have to give certain types of analysis, and then come up with the recommendations, right? So when we go through this process, actually, even in a 2 or 3 month project, a lot of teams at McKinsey, they really first focus on their first week and front load everything that they can to come up with a sort of a deck that is half completed, but half completed in the sense that it's not 25 pages. If it's like a 50-page deck, it's not the first 25 pages complete. It's like the entire deck is completed the first maybe 3 or 4 pages, as well as what the conclusion is going to be, what the end output is going to be, and we actually dummy that all out. So in a way, the journey is set, even though it's very ambiguous, we make sure that we know what the journey would look like very early on in the project. I think
let's talk about, yeah. Before we jump off that, I think that is something that innovation leaders understand very well already. I mean, the whole idea of rather than, you know, go into a detailed analysis process and, you know, really dive into everything, you know, to first come up with kind of a prototype of your finished product and start kind of testing that and collecting the data that's going to test that. That's the essence of the lean startup. And that's the essence of design. That's one of the key principles of design thinking. And, you know, I don't know if you know the answer to this. I've talked to many people in management at IDEO, and you know they talk about how some of the way that they organize IDEO actually came from McKinsey. And I wonder which direction, you know, this causality came from. Like, where did this idea come from? That who has influenced whom? And maybe it's just good design. You know, whether you're designing a solution to a client problem or a product for a new market, that whole idea of prototyping something quickly and early to be able to get feedback and to test it and get feedback on it is something that is just good design. Do you have a perspective on that?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, two cases. One is I was talking to a Korean friend of mine about 2 years ago when we're talking about the potential of Internet of Things, and he was a McKinsey consultant. He was talking about rapid prototyping and this kind of mentality of designing beforehand and understanding what the minimal viable product would be. And I thought that was, he was trained in McKinsey. He wasn't a designer, but he knew all these concepts, right? And then this recently, I was talking to a friend who was creating some kind of restaurant app on the iPhone, and he just came out and said he has about, you know, a week's worth of time to create. Maybe he spent only one-tenth of what a regular app would cost to come up with the layout and the prototype before he would actually get all these famous Google engineers to work on, because he works at Google, to work on these projects for him. So I really thought, wow, he knew about this before he even started or went into these kind of firms, right? These kind of companies like Google and IDEO.
We're talking with Shu Hattori. He's author of The McKinsey Edge, Success Principles from the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm. And if you were a former consultant, give us a call and tell us what you learned from consulting about leading innovation. You can reach us at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. One of the things to our listeners, one of the things I found interesting about this book is that what you do is you take some of these principles that we're all familiar with in the innovation field, like prototyping, but you also connect it back to what does that mean for you as a leader? You know, as you're leading a team through this chaotic, messy process, you know, how do you manage yourself and how do you manage your team and how do you lead them through the ups and downs of a process like this? So, if that's a critical one, if kind of coming up with your 1 week answer in a 3 month or 6 month long development effort, innovation effort, problem solving effort, what is the personal side behind that? What would be some of the other principles that you would recommend to a leader trying to lead a team in that early phase of a project?
So I would say in the early phase of the project, you would have to really secure. So Dave, can you repeat that again? Are you talking about front loading or another different kind of principle?
Well, for the front loading, I mean, or just any of these, as you're thinking about how to lead a team through a chaotic process. One of the things I like about your book is that it does deal with that personal side. So what do you think are the keys to being a successful leader of an innovation team?
Okay, so I think it boils down to measuring, sort of gauging your team members and how good they are and how much they can carry out their jobs. And we do that at McKinsey from my experience a lot, and that is to know the capacity of the individual, how much quality output they can have, what's the magnitude of the output that they can produce, and really gauging them up front to get that, to make that happen. And in order to do that, you need to first give them mini tasks, so small tasks that will gauge their, you know, how they could perform in a bigger scale, in a larger scale. So in McKinsey's case, we would give them chances to stand on the whiteboard and write out the storyline themselves when they're an analyst or associate. And then we would give them that opportunity. And once we know that they can do that, they're responsible for that, then we will be able to give them a larger chunk going into the meeting room and talking with the VPs or the senior management. So we would give them these bite-sized chunk pieces first to gauge their potentials and the capacity to work. And then on the second front, I think it's really also important to give them meaningful, independent work streams. So to give them these work streams that are clear-cut and not overlapping with each other. And a lot of times these innovations happen, of course, in this cross-momentum, but it's also important that each individual has their own responsibility and what they bring to the table. And I think what I learned in firms like McKinsey is they are able to really gauge that kind of meaningfulness and independent workload for these consultants.
And, you know, another one I would add to that in terms of being a team leader of an innovation team is your principle number 26. And by the way, for our listeners, the way the book is written is that these are really bite-sized principles. And you can kind of pick up the book and, you know, just read a couple of them and put it back down again. And so they're very separable. We may have lost Shu there. They're very separable. So, principle 26 is something that is a really interesting one, in that McKinsey always, at least when I was there, put a lot of effort into team building. And team building, you know, especially in an innovation team, if you want to get that diverse team that really understands all the issues you need to understand about marketing, product development, manufacturing, finance, and so forth, and also maybe do it in different cultures, design a product for very different customer segments, you're going to need to bring together a range of different skills and knowledge and perspectives and timeframes and even languages. And principle number 26 that Shu talked about was to learn team members' defining moments and personal sides, to try and get team members closer to you by building an empathy and connection. And McKinsey spent a lot of time on that. Let me pause here. Shu, are you back?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
I was just saying principle 26
right.
was to learn team members' defining moments and personal sides, to build that team effect. And I remember the partners I worked with really spending time making sure that I, as a new manager, did that, because a little bit of effort up front prevented a lot of trouble later. Mm. What else would you think is key to being a good innovation leader? What other principles would you say are especially important?
I think especially important principle-wise would be principle 13, which is having a role model.
Okay. Talk about it. Why do you think that's important for an innovation leader?
This is really important because we learn as we grow into consulting that there is our guru of consulting. His name is Marvin Bauer, right? And he invented management consulting. And we look up to him. We learn from him. But within the company, there's the values and behaviors that are expected of a consultant. And that is very important for a person, I guess, for consultants, as well as anyone who is looking to grow and to be inspired and to be innovative, because this is one way a person can grow extremely well. And in role modeling, it's also important to see that it's not just one person, but by learning to have different kinds of role models for different types of things you need to do. For example, if you were if you had to stand in front of a big audience and give a large audience presentation, then you would have some other role model A, person A, as opposed to if you're carrying out a small meeting, then you have a different role model B. And by doing that, you grow much faster. So giving that role model input in your head allows you to really cut out these different kinds of situations, and then you grow much faster, you accelerate at a much faster pace, and you know what a leader should look like.
We're talking with Shu Hattori. He is the author of the new book, The McKinsey Edge, Success Principles from the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm. And if you would like some advice as an innovation leader, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. I like your principle number 20, question more and talk less. I think we're told that quite a lot in terms of understanding our customer and, you know, going out there and practicing, you know, show me, not tell me, and really developing empathy for our customer's needs. But it's also equally true inside the company that sometimes the biggest barriers to innovation are really happen within, you know, with our internal clients in different parts of the firm that we're trying to develop a product for, you know, to make money for. How do you interpret principle number 20, question more and talk less?
Well, I really like this principle. I personally find this principle to be quite powerful. And I think the key here is that both entrepreneurs and innovative leaders, they share, you know, and McKinsey partners and directors, they share this commonality, and they are able to question and listen more. They want you to give them, they're very genuine and they're very modest, and they understand that they can learn a lot more from you than them talking about themselves. And I think that the key here on this topic is that these leaders, these people do not move from topic to topic. They take a genuine interest in what you're saying and in what has to be done. And then they're not afraid to admit things they don't know. And I think this is very very key for someone that wants to aspire to another unknown, ambiguous domain, because you really need to know and ask questions. Even if you don't know, you have to admit it. And that's something that true people who question more know about. And the third is they're always able to grasp interesting things quickly. So they are able to get down to the details and to the bottom of things very quickly. And that's why they can question more. So I think that's my take on the principle 20. That's really important.
Give us one more. What is one more of your principles that you think an innovation leader should learn and follow to be successful?
I think the most important one I would say is principle number 42.
And that is
really going the extra mile, but it's really learning to give away. It's learning to give away knowledge and tools. It's really resembling the paid forward economics. And that has helped a lot of, including my own experience at McKinsey, but helped a lot of people succeed.
Give us an example of principle 42.
My experience was that in McKinsey, it's known to some individuals that it's up and up or out culture, right? So you start with a BA, an associate, and you have terms, and you have a half year reviews, and 2 years later, you need to, you know, the firm makes a decision whether you can be promoted or not. And in these decisions, you are more prone to keeping all the knowledge and know-how to yourself so that you can really be ahead of your competitors. But my experience told me that we started sharing our information. I started sharing different Excel models, different executive summaries, all of them sanitized, of course. But I sent them out, and I started doing these sharing groups. And that really elevated everyone's knowledge, and it actually made me much stronger in terms of problem-solving skills and consulting skills. But moreover, I think the firm itself has this sharing mindset by providing consultants, as you know. I shouldn't say that the platform, but it's a knowledge platform that the firm provides where it really kicks in to share these ideas. And this sharing really makes that, you know, that firm and that knowledge even richer.
I remember, we used to talk about the shoe shine, that when a client would come to you sometimes. So I remember working with a car company, and we were doing work on product development, the process and structure of product development to be able to do multiple models from a common platform rather than just one car at a time. And this person came and said, we'd really like to know about whether we should use aluminum in car chassis. And, what's happening with welding of aluminum, and, you know, there's obvious weight savings, but and it had nothing to do with the goal of the project, but we ended up burning a couple days really among the team, a couple of person days, to come back with an analysis of what was happening with the use of aluminum in car chassis. And, you know, this wasn't something that we It's something we could have easily said no to, but we had this, you know, we called it a shoe shine. Like if the client wanted something extra, you know, we'd give them the shoe shine. And I found that that was just a great thing to do, you know, from a career perspective. I still have many good friends. That person who asked me for that study is still a very good friend of mine 23 years later. But past that, I think that relates to innovation as well, is that if you can do a shoe shine for your customer, right? If you can think of not just what's, you know, good for the product, not just what is a good design for a product, but also, you know, what else can you do? I think that leads to a much greater likelihood of success. Does that make sense for you?
Whoa, that really makes sense for me, yeah.
Well, let me ask you another question. And we're talking with Shu Hattori. He's the author of The McKinsey Edge, Success Principles from the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm. What's fascinating to me about this book is how much it reflects my training at McKinsey. But I was there from 91 through 96. That's 20 years ago, and things aren't much different. Does that mean that McKinsey isn't innovative?
Of course, I wouldn't say that at all. I think that the key here is innovation probably lies in, and of course, Dave, you have a wealth of knowledge here, but I think the innovation lies in core values and principles that help bring about innovation. So it's important that these are also intact, whether it was 20 years ago when you were at McKinsey or whether it's now. And I think it's just a proof that the company is actually being innovative and keeping these core principles at heart to bring about this innovation. And I think that's what's most important when we talk about firms, when we talk about long-lasting companies.
Yeah, I mean, my sense, I've kept in touch with people that have stayed at McKinsey all these years, you know, people I started with and people that were just starting as I was leaving, and they said the problem solving is completely different. You know, the types of sources that are used, you know, we had to look up stuff and find books and libraries and stuff like that. And of course, it's all online now. And the speed of analysis, the depth of problem solving is just worlds different. But it's interesting that these principles around it have stayed fairly constant. And so how do you see things changing at McKinsey? You know, what do they change and what do they not change? How do they decide what's open for innovation and what's not open for innovation? Which of these principles are fixed and which might be different 10 years from now?
Wow, that's a tough question.
I know, but I think it's a really interesting innovation question, don't you? I mean, it's something where I think that some of these things are going to be the same 20 years from now. You know, I think many of the principles that you outline, if we come back and talk to each other in 20 years and invite somebody who's, you know, a new partner at the firm and hasn't even, you know, gotten his or her MBA now to join us, I think many of these will be the same. But that doesn't mean that the firm isn't innovating. And so, you know, I'm just curious how you think about innovation, you know, in terms of what should be in bounds and what shouldn't be in bounds.
I think that, like you said, the core principles and values, most of these principles will stay intact. And what should change in terms of innovation is because of the influx of information and how we deal with the prioritization of this information, using technology to enable that. So in terms of McKinsey, they've literally changed the way, like you said, the way we do our analysis, and then the way we do our general, how we have a digital team, a digital marketing, or a digital team that does all of that for us, and how we outsource or how we ask outside vendors to help create certain charts and things like that probably didn't exist before. I think that's really focusing on what really matters. So they're really going down into what does consulting or consultants really need to provide and really need to be innovative. And that question is always around problem solving. So there is a core step-by-step process on problem solving that McKinsey holds dear and does not change. But then in respect to how they approach it and how deep they can go and how fast they can come up with the answers by using different ideas from around the world, is really innovative. And the more we see the consulting company or industry grow and McKinsey grows, I think that they will become more global and projects will be a lot more intertwined, and it still is already, and that we will see keep it growing.
So we've only got another minute left, Shu. What one last piece of advice would you give to an innovation leader based on your experience at McKinsey?
My last piece of advice would be Principle 46, and that is renew yourself. So it's prepared to renew yourself, and I think a lot of people forget or get too into one or two things, and they must make that successful. And I think that really deals with our own personal career decisions, our personal life, that we sometimes need to pivot. And when we pivot, we need to know that our values might change or our things that we hold dear might change. But being able to know that about ourselves and not just about our jobs or about the company is really important. And you need to learn that. You also need to renew maybe 3 or 4 times and have that expectation along the way. And with that expectation, you know when it comes and hits you, you're going to be okay. And you're going to make it successful. So I think that will help lead on to better innovation.
Great advice. We've been talking with Shu Hattori. He's the author of The McKinsey Edge, Success Principles from the World's Most Powerful Consulting Firm, a book that I recommend that any innovation leader study and read. Shu, thanks very much for coming on Innovation Navigation.
Thank you very much, Dave.